Hello, everybody. Welcome to our latest edition of 'Cause I'm Humanity. So we are sat in a London cafe. I'm sat here with Madame Jordana Riva, and she's going to introduce herself in the most beautiful, splendid, Guyanese, Celtic, gorgeous, Kentish town, Camden lady way you could ever imagine. And as you know, I am Gavin Odhiambo Okello Davis. This is your boy, Kenyan Skasa. Via Wales, via Lancashire, etc., 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 etc. All you need to know is I'm a child of Gaia. So, Madame Jordan River, please introduce yourself.
Hello. Hello, I'm Jordan River, and I'm excited to be doing a podcast with you.
That's it. Thank you, Jordan. Now, we were having an extremely, extremely, extremely nice and conversation. So, me, Gavin Odhiambo, I've been quoting Wizard of Oz a lot. I was just telling Jordan about a meeting I had with a man. Now, this man was a lad from Bergenaz, like he's about 56, like old school Bergenaz. And I sat down next to him and we started talking. And as we'd say in Bergenaz, he had about 5 teeth in his head, which means he only had about 5 teeth in his mouth. So he had about 5 teeth in his head. And then he just starts asking, what's it called? And I knew exactly what to talk about. So I said to him, do you mean coronavirus? And he was like, yeah, coronavirus. What do you think about it? Because, like, you know. So for him, the coronavirus, there's a little something going on. But I'll get onto that in a different podcast. Now, what he wanted to do was to talk to me about what he believed to be the case. And I think that was because he saw as a young person, he saw, in his words, that I'm an intelligent person. And afterwards, he confirmed that actually his kids, you know, my generation, what is it, 1994, we are split in two. We've got the kids who are like me, oh, what's this? Discovering this, doing this. And we've got the kids who look at TikTok videos and never laugh and don't know how to have fun. And they believe everything they read. So, as ever, we have generations split into two. So, he was obviously concerned that his kids were that way. And I think he was looking for me for validation that he is not crazy. I told him, no, honey, you ain't crazy. Everything you're saying, all the above. I don't think that Her Majesty the Queen's government, I don't think that they have the best intentions for us. Some of them may do, but those in power, to be doubted. To be doubted.
Always.
Now, Jordan was telling me something fascinating about her knowledge of Irish folk. You know, one of the key Irish folk rules, which is never judge a book by its cover. Mm-hmm. Please tell me about that in your own words.
Well, basically, just if you're going into fairyland, to Athra Dedanann.
Say that again?
To Athra Dedanann.
Athra Dedanann.
To Athra Dedanann.
To Athra Dedanann.
And don't, you know, this can be via mushrooms, by any way you've been allowed into fairyland. Hmm. Do not judge books by their cover. What may seem light and beautiful and aesthetically pleasing, filled with the glamour, is often the thing that will harm you. What may seem dark and grotesque and hunched over, you know, this idea of the crone, the witch, the thing that is terrifying, can actually be the thing that will save you, that has your best interests at heart, that is there to look after you.
Well,
people are so fooled by the glamour, by what they have decided is good, what they've decided is bad. You know, and the more I study these sort of mythologies, like at the moment I've just been in completely besotted, obsessed, you could say, with Medusa. She's my goddess at the moment. She is my
worship. I'm going to hold Medusa in my little left palm. I'm closing her in there. But I'd like to talk about glamour. Now, my understanding of glamour is it's a Scottish word, Celtic. That's my understanding. But you've studied Celtic mythology a lot more profoundly than I have. So tell me what you think glamour is.
Well, for me, more in witchcraft than anything. So it's more in witchcraft that we use glamour, and witchcraft is
used. Say glamour, as the McKelts might say it. Glamour. How would you say it?
I just say glamour, but it's whichever way you want to say it, it is illusion.
Yeah.
It equals illusion. It is the, when we are creating glamour, when we are casting glamour, when we are performing glamour, it is illusion. And then obviously you've got the glamour world, the world, the Babylon, you know, it is an illusion. It is there to tempt people, but nobody is happy in glamour. No one is happy in Babylon. They are all drug addict killing themselves. They're...
So let's do a recap of what Babylon is. So I did it in my previous podcast, but obviously Babylon comes from the Rastafari culture, and this is a belief in an unequal society that exists on glamour. Mm-hmm. And what's glamour? It is illusion, it is false. It's got smiley faces, but actually they're calculating behind those beautiful eyes.
It's fake. It's illusion.
Fake.
It's fake.
Fake. Hollywood, darling.
Yeah.
Paris, the streets of Paris, darling. Of course, you can only be fashionable if you're wearing the clothes from Paris, my dear.
And then you've got, Chicago. Mm. Give them the old razzle-dazzle. Razzle-dazzle them. How can they see with sequins in their eyes? You can pull the wool over anyone's eyes with a chuck a bit of glitter in their eyes, a bit of sequins. They see the sparkles, and they're completely fooled. You can literally get away with murder. That is part of the songs.
Very interesting.
They'll let you get away with murder.
Very, very interesting. So, Chicago. I mean, this is all about women who kill. You know, Lipschitz, Cicero. We all know that. So, this is about deadly women because... The female of the sex is deadlier. The female of the, say it again.
The female of the species is more deadly than the male.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, madame. Merci beaucoup. So I've got this little left fist open, and who's in there? Medusa. Ha, please tell me about her.
Oh my God, I want to tell the world about her. Medusa. Medusa. That Gorgon. Gorgon meaning terrifying woman, you know, which is so close to my name. So people used to call me Gorgon. Jordan, Gorgon, love it. I want to take on the name Gorgon.
And memories coming through when I said Jordan was a scary name.
Yes!
Because I found Katie Price scary. I found her very scary, but if we... She's got glamour, but she's also got grit.
Yeah,
the girl got grit.
She's hardcore.
She's hardcore. You know what?
I
read her biography. This is no accident.
I didn't.
Three biographies, autobiographies, I read all of them.
Right.
And basically she said, well, I need a man who can handle me. Otherwise, I'll just walk all over them. So this is a woman who is aware of her own power, her supernatural powers. She's a Celtic woman. She's from the British Isles. She's magical, and she doesn't even know it. Oh, so, Jordan, you're telling me that we're all magical, that we're all able to cast a spell of glamour? You're telling me that we all have magical powers? That's absolutely revolutionary. I can't believe that. Let me just take a little moment to let that sink in. It sunk in. Now tell me about Medusa.
Medusa. So it's what you do with that power. So Medusa was... We all know her as this terrifying demon.
Mm.
With snakes in her head.
Mm.
Who turned men to stone. Or turned people to stone. We know her as somebody who turns... You look
at her... Specifically men. Specifically men.
That's where it comes down to. She was raped. The story of Medusa, people don't know. She was raped by Poseidon in Athena's temple. Now the dual idea... is that she was immortal. She was a beautiful woman, mortal woman, who was raped by Poseidon in Athena's temple. Some say Athena got so angry that she, and victim blamed, and so she turned her into this demonic monster and cast her down to the Gorgons. And others say
Athena
was protecting her and turned her into someone that men couldn't even get close to, because if they came to hurt her, she could turn them into stone.
Get it, honey?
So, you know, it's the two-sided things. Was Athena trying to curse
her? So you're telling me that she's basically a hood woman? She's
a
hood woman.
The three Gorgons.
Okay.
Three sisters, terrifying.
Three hood women.
She never turned a single woman to stone. It was only men, and they were all trying to kill her. She was protecting herself, but she has been spun in history as a demon. She was a rape victim who was trying to protect herself.
Reminds me of Maleficent. We've all watched Maleficent, haven't we?
Exactly. Now people are starting to break open these ideas the same way if we look at colonialism. We were, you know, when I was in history at school, you know, history at school, it was always, let's the heroic British Empire as they you know.
Rule Britannia!
Civilization!
Britannia rule the world!
To the savages that were living peacefully with nature,
yes.
Fucking up the environment,
yes.
And not enslaving people. And if they did enslave people, they would enslave their own people. They wouldn't take a whole other race of people and do enslaving.
No, I just wanted to do a little side note, honey. This is some knowledge that I did quite a while back, a little bit of research. So, Britannia is very interesting. So, Britannia is actually the symbol of. Of the British Empire. Now, who is Britannia inspired by? Madame Boudica. Madame Boudica. And what is Britannia wearing? She's wearing a Roman robe. So what they're actually showing is they're wearing Boudica post Roman colonization. Gosh. What did she do? She gonna fuck up the Romans. She gonna take it. She gonna take the sword out. She gonna fuck them. They gonna fuck you. Because what really are the Celts? They are Africans living in harmony with nature, but without the melanin. That's all they were. They were Africans living in tribes, building houses out of God's, Gaia's creation. Wood.
Yes, wood.
Wood.
The natural products, and what a beautiful fertile land to do that on, with wild animals. There was, wolves and all sorts of, boar, and I think there may have even been bears for all I know, and there are definitely bears in Poland. You know, all of this amazingness, and it's just completely, all these beautiful, beautiful Celtic traditions, honouring the goddess, the harvest even, the harvest festivals, keeping in sync with the seasons, when you can reap, when you can sow, and honouring the sun, obviously then that brings us into this idea of Christianity, because Christianity came in and it took over the pagan festivals, but you can't just obliterate someone's tradition, so it took them over.
And you corrupt it.
Yeah, but so you've got winter solstice, mm-hmm. pretty much the same day, mm-hmm. a few days different to the birth of Christ. What is this? Mm-hmm. This is Christmas. Mm-hmm. The sun, in the pagan tradition, the Celtic pagan tradition, the sun god is born. It is the birth of the sun god. The days literally, technically, literally, scientifically get longer from this point. You have reached the darkest point of the night and the days get longer. The sun is born, but it's not strong. It's not strong. It's not a teenager. It's not a lover sun. It is a brand new baby sun. It doesn't have the strength to warm you. It needs caring, but the days will get longer from now on. And then Christians say, just put an of in there. The son of God is born. The sun god, the son of God. Literally an of.
So you're telling me that the Antichrist is actually the Christ from the Christian religion. Stay with me, listeners, stay with me. What's that mean? Well, how about this? The Antichrist is actually just a figment of the human imagination.
Oh,
what a wonderful imagination we have. So you're telling me that Lucifer, that Satan, the devil, the Antichrist, this is all a figment of our imagination. That's crazy. Let me have a think about what I mean. Well, I think what I mean by that is by actually swapping by forcing in the birth of this Christ on this 25th of December, they're able to create an Antichrist, because that means that they're able to go around destroying and devouring and raping and pillaging.
Raping and pillaging, exactly.
Yes, so they're actually able to create their own Antichrist by doing that. And then they start to talk about the devil and Satan and all of this stuff. Oh, you have the devil. If you don't follow our religion, you are the devil. You are an infidel. You don't deserve to be stoned. You deserve to be burned. Obviously, they did that to the witches, didn't they?
Of course, women.
Oh, yes.
Midwives.
Mm.
People practicing old herbalism. But, then you've got the Celtic, Catholic Church who are raping children. But, obviously there's the devil. But they're not the devil because they're the priests. So how could priests be the devil? Well, that's...
I know, because priests are wonderful and they have clean clothes.
Holy
men and their men.
Nothing terrible has been done in the name of the priests and people going, obviously, to... the missionaries going and spreading homophobia in foreign countries and then deciding that they'd got it wrong, but by that point the countries have taken it on. But then you've also got the reborn, so you've got Easter. We're coming up to Easter,
so this is very clever stuff. Keep that thought, Jordan. I just wanted to go back to the homophobia thing.
Yes.
So when Jordan mentioned the homophobia, if we think about the most homophobic places in the planet, for example, I'm from Kenya.
Yeah.
Ooh, not good to be gay there.
No,
go to
no.
Uganda, honey.
Ooh.
Get ready.
Death.
It is illegal. Other places, we could all do
Caribbean,
our research. The Caribbean. Jamaica, that be the most homophobic place on the planet.
Oh, I'm from Guyana.
Okay.
Not good. Most homophobic part of South America.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, so we're learning a lot right now, ladies and gentlemen.
Because it's also the most Christian part of South
Interesting, America. Interesting. So, who was the archetype? Who was the architect of homophobia, as we know it? Was it somebody called Henry VIII? Divorced, beheaded, survived, divorced, what do you know the story?
Well, Henry VIII liked to chop off women's heads, but all in the name of God.
All in the name of God.
And his... libido.
And his libido and his belief in the patriarchy and that only men can never do anything good because all women are whatever.
God forbid just divorce. No, you must chop off
heads. And you know what? We all know about Henry VIII, but how about all this stuff that Jordan is spilling? Like, she's spilling the tea.
Homophobia around the planet. literally fed. It was not there. It was not there.
Mm-hmm.
Until the missionaries went and put it there. And then criticizing black communities for being backwards.
And let's remember the buggery law, everybody. The buggery law was set up by Henry VIII. I don't know the ins and outs. Don't know the ins and outs, but the buggery law, he wanted to go up against the Freemasons, because the Freemasons were...
Power.
They had power, which was aside from society. It's a secret society. We all know about the Freemasons. We do. They all have the briefcases. They all have the secret stuff. They've got a place in London. They've got a place in Liverpool. They're balling. Like, they've got doing their own thing. But they're also apart from society. Traditionally. I don't know what it's like today. I've never been a Freemason. I don't know any personally. But, you know, back then, they were doing their own thing. And you know what? What have gays been doing? They have been doing their thing apart from... what we call Babylon, unfair society, unfair, you know, unfair rule. So, what would Henry VIII know? He would know that there have been members of the royal court who were gay, who would have sex, who do this kind of thing. But then he saw that they had power that he didn't have. Now, he was a megalomaniac, sociopathic demon. Probably, let's just say it, probably molested as a child, probably terribly, terribly, terribly physically and emotionally abused. Absolutely, which would explain why they were so horrendous to the people that they ruled over. And then he decided, well, let's create the Buggery Act, and then that spread across Europe. So this is all very interesting stuff.
Because we all know the Romans were also Romans, Greeks. Obviously, lesbian comes from Lesbos,
Greek island,
you know, Roman Greece, they were real big fans of homosexuality, it was part of them.
Well, to add on to that, the Greeks, that was part of their culture. However, when the Romans culturally appropriated, now this is quite wild,
they culturally appropriated everything from
the Greeks. Because originally, Italy, what we know is Italy, was colonized by Athens, was colonized by the Greek city-states. Naples was colonized by Athens. Napoli was colonized by Athens. However, obviously these Roman tribes built together and they wanted to gain cultural revenge against the Greek oppressors. So they kicked them out, they stole everything that they had created, claimed it for themselves, renamed everything, and then said that Greek culture was actually inferior to Roman culture. Sound familiar? Mm-hmm. History repeats itself, everybody. History repeats everything.
Yes.
It does. So
yes.
The Romans were the ones who were to actually create... You know, Leviticus was a Roman. The one who said to lie with the man is an abomination.
Oh.
That's in the Bible. He was a Roman.
Oh, this fucking book called the Bible, written by men.
The Holy Bible. Patriotic. There'd be holes in that Bible. There'd be holes in that book.
Well, the first thing I'd like to fucking point out with this whole, like, book thing, like, let's just bring this shit down. This whole idea of Eve... the downfall of, like, the whole world. The woman took a fucking apple, ate the fucking apple, and the whole world came out. If Eve ate that fucking apple, why the hell is it lodged in Adam's lying ass throat? Adam's apple, people. Adam's apple.
Pay attention, bitches. It's hidden in plain sight. Pay attention. Okay, I didn't get to hear the full story about Medusa, however.
Oh, yes.
I'd like to just ask you a question. So...
and also Easter, because it's literally the same thing. Easter, the Son of God is reborn. Easter is when the Son God is reborn. So that's why you have eggs. That's why you have, you know, it's fertility festival. It's why you have... it's a fertility festival, a pagan fertility festival. You have bunnies. What's bunnies got to do with fucking the Middle East? Nothing. It, literally, bunnies is to do with the pagan sex festival of fertility, and about the sun. The sun god is in his lover phase. He is a lover. He's making love with the goddess, the earth, and he is stronger now. Before, he was a child. He was not. He was. You know.
So he's a teenager.
Baby.
He's in his youth. He's in his prime.
He's going through. And he's literally.
So those shoots are just like the
flowers are coming.
The flowers. Wow.
The
so that's just.
Is returning.
I mean, I've always
the
thought.
Son
why
of god
do
returns
when we are when
the
we
son
are
of God. Returns. He is reborn.
Mm-hmm.
It's his second birth. He's now able to bring full light. And then you see the image of the cross. The image of the cross is the same image of the sword.
Okay.
It's the sword placing downwards. So it is not a sword placing upwards. Is, you know, that is That's going into battle.
Okay.
This is a submissive sword. It's placed downwards. It's the same image of the cross. They worship the sword.
Okay.
Before the cross, they had the same fucking image, worship the sword. And then if you have a completely equal-sided cross, which is equal-sided, so not like a sword, it's equal-sided, that is the sun. That is the pagan symbol of the sun.
Got it.
So they didn't. They weren't adding anything too new when they brought Christianity. They weren't putting it on top of, you know, they built the Christian temples on top of pagan sacred sites, which were sacred with ley lines.
Sounds like
circles.
Mexico City. Built on what, Tenochtitlan, I think that's what it's called.
Right, right.
Exactly.
If you find ancient places where people worship, you just take those places and build, put your temple on top of it. You know, if we were to do that again right now, we would go to places, temples, and just put, chuck down their thing, burn down their thing, and put our own thing on top of it.
Also sounds like Londinium. But that became London. The center of colonialism and capitalism and all of it. And ley lines. Tell me about that.
So you've got these grids. I mean, I'm still learning ley lines. Ley lines are something that's very interesting to me, but they are grids that connect. And when I look at the maps, I have to have them in front of me. You can see how there are geometrical patterns that connect everything together. And these points of power. Everything was placed in specific points of power.
Okay.
And, you know, you can, and you will feel, you know, spooky goings on, as you say, you know. I love Einstein's spooky action at a distance type thing. You know, it's this kind of high points of power for prayer, for manifestation, for the power of the mind.
Okay.
Obviously, Stonehenge is going to be one of the most known ley line points, but they're all around the world. They're all around the planet. Everything, nothing was placed accidentally. If you look at geometrical patterns, they were very... Look at Egypt. This was not an accident. Nothing was just like, oh, we'll just put that over there, shall we? Yeah, we'll just put that over there.
Mm-hmm.
looking a bit cluttered. Let's put it over. No, they were gridding this out, looking at the stars, looking at these geometrical patterns, and looking at the sun, the rising of the sun, the festivals, you know, all the, you know. And these are the pagan worships of the planet. We had it everywhere. Everywhere had this pre-organized religion. And, you know, everyone had theirs. I mean, if anything, if you look at India, I think how fantastic, because they've kept their stronghold. Hinduism is their pagan religion, and they have kept it. You know, how amazing. That's not actually that easy. To have not gone, okay, I'm going to look at a book. You know, they can have as many gods as they want. It's not a one god thing. It is literally, and these gods are, you know, when you look at gods, it's very similar to today's, which comes back to Medusa. It's very similar to today's famous people. You know, they're you know, especially if you look back at Greek and Roman, you know, they're, like I said, Poseidon's raping Medusa. They were rapists. They were, which is, if you look at, you know, look at Harvey Weinstein, you look at famous people today, these gods are a bunch of fucking alcoholic rapists. like mad people, you know, but in charge. They're beings in charge. That's all it is, really. And it's a lot of it's to do with glamour. And, you know, anyone who ever speaks, they say, you know, we are the gods. We can be the gods. You create a myth around yourself. You can create enough. You know, you do something that makes you famous, and you can become a god and go down in history. That kind of thing.
Or an anti-god.
It's all glamour.
Anti-god. 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 So, Jordan, this is wonderful. You're extremely knowledgeable on all of these subjects, every single one that we've covered. I can't remember count how many. But you know what? You know what? There are no subjects. There's one subject.
That's just, exactly. It's a
There's
world.
One subject. The world thing. The world
it's
is one subject.
One being. It's not separated. They want you to think it's separated. It's like a marble, and we're all in it.
Yes.
The only thing I would like to, you know, for me, that's why I go back, when I think of gods, it's too much. It's too man-made. Look at nature. Just carry it back to nature and look at animals, you know, which is then brings it back to like the Native American traditions and the Native tribal traditions of the rainforest. They worship the animals. It's less of this human ideas of things. It's more back to the earth. The earth, the soil, is the god. It is the mother that we're all born on. It is where we will return to. And the spirits within the trees and the faces that you will see once you undergo these traumatic experiences. And the most, when I, you know, the only thing I could possibly say, the only godly thing I've ever really learned, other than some of the far out shit I've seen, is all arguments, all disagreements, if you bring it back to nature, you look at this planet as a whole, you look at how many things have to coexist together, but they're also different. Our differences are usually what tears us apart and makes us start wars and all sorts of disagreements. But a bird, a bear, a fish, and a mouse, just take four corners of the planet, a bird, a bear, a fish, and a mouse. If you give them a central issue that they all have to deal with, the bird will say, you rise above it. You must rise above and look down from this bird's eye point of view. Look down as if you were the eyes of God and look and see how small it is and look and see it from a bird's eye perspective. The fish will say, you go with the flow. You just ride that wave. You just keep flowing with it. Just don't try and go against the tide. Just go with it. Ride the current. The bear will say, you stand and you fight. You fucking tear that shit apart and you growl and you show your teeth. And then you hide and you, like, you know, sleep through winter in a hibernate.
Lick those wounds.
And the mouse will say, you hide, you're in danger, there are threats, this place is that scary. It's, you know, you look at the details, look up close, look at the details, keep what you love close and keep your eyes peeled, keep your ears, you know, and be ready to run and hide at every second. They are all right. Every single one of them had a right
tick,
idea.
Tick, 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 tick.
Wrong for each other. You cannot have a bird telling a fish to fly. Mm. You cannot have a bear telling a bird to hibernate in a cave. I mean, it is literally what's right for one person is not right for another.
Mm-hmm.
And we as humanity constantly pushing on each other. This is my way. You must do it my way. This is, you know, every argument is the same argument. Why are you not me? Why do you not see the way I see? And all these creatures have learned to live harmoniously together. And it's not in a peaceful vegan way. It is in a balanced way. Nature is brutal, but it is balanced. Nothing fouls its own nest. Nothing pollutes its own water. Nothing destroys. It's not a virus like humanity. It is... Nature lives in balance. The game, it's a game. Life and death, they know that it's a game. They're not, you know, it's the cosmic joke that you die. You know, it's a cosmic joke.
Divine comedy.
Being born, being death, you look at seasons. The tree of life is always there. You've always got the roots, and you know, it's once you're connected with nature, this concept of death being this terrible thing, it's not so scary. You realize your eternalness, you also realize the freedom and the rest of death, you know, taking a break before the rebirth. You know, all of this, you see it, what everything is. But we're so removed from that.
Mm-hmm.
We're so removed from that, from nature, from living at one and in harmony, out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
We think we're good, like these things, these things, like the glamour coming back. We think we're pure. We think we're this holy blessing upon the planet, with this superior intelligence. But as far as I can see, the only intelligent human beings are the ones who are still living as quote-unquote savages in the rainforest, in harmony, humble, and they cannot be paid off by money.
I'll say this to you, Jordan. We are keeping, you know, we are catching up.
We're getting
up. We children born in Britain, we are catching up, and we're catching up very quickly.
So
let's not put ourselves down. We are born in concrete. However, we are catching up and we are doing the work that those people born in the rainforest, born in Africa, born everywhere around the planet that is still remote or was remote 100 years ago, we are now doing the work and we have now had the ability to learn. So we have, you know, when people say you can't use master's tools to dismantle the house, well, how about this? How about you can? How about you can use master's tools? What is master's tool? Technology, iPhones. If we look at the back of an iPhone, what do we see?
Apple.
A bit of an apple.
Yes, a bit of an apple.
Cosmic comedy, right? Cosmic comedy. It's however you want it to be. So it could be an apple that nourishes apple. You. Or it can be an apple that poisons you.
The poison apple, which then brings back to the fairy tale of Snow White.
Okay.
Apples, there's always apples. And then the Troy as well. You've got Troy, the whole fall of Troy. It all began because Aphrodite gave... created the apple and no, yeah, that was it. So Paris had to pick the goddess that was the best goddess, and he gave it to Aphrodite, I think, because he wanted love or something. He had to get this apple. It was all due to a fucking apple, basically. Apples are really... But then somebody told me recently that in the Bible it does not say apple was the fruit of the fall. It just says something about a fruit.
Slice open an apple, what do you see inside?
Five-pointed star.
Okay. I was going to say a puss. And it is poom.
Every fruit's got that, but it's a
lady's vagina.
Star.
And then you've got the little clitoris, which is the seed inside. So that's what I had in my head. Very interesting, very interesting. And
how
all of this...
dare I not think of a vagina? I am usually the one thinking
about it. Right, well, I'm thinking about it for you. I came out of one, and you know what? I know what they look
we
like.
We all came out of one. How amazing is that?
Yeah, well, actually, I didn't. I was a cesarean.
Cesarean.
So I didn't come out of one.
Came out of the belly.
Yeah, yeah, getting there. Close.
My sister was a cesarean. I came out of one. But yeah, exactly, got there. You were rolling around in the the womb,
and the cosmic juice.
Yeah, in the void, the dark void.
The dark void.
This is the other thing of the use of language. People use the word dark to represent something bad. We've already, anyone who hasn't seen the doll test of children, who, of all ethnicities, who are looking at dolls and trying to say which doll is good and which doll is bad because of the color of its skin.
Let's just say for our listeners who haven't heard of this. If you go onto YouTube and put
you
on
the doll test.
You know, the black doll, the white doll, doll test, you search that, then you'll get it. Also, there's a lady called Jane, I forgot her surname, but she will talk about the brown eyes and the blue eyes experiment.
Oh,
so look into that, ladies and gentlemen, and non-binary folk in there.
It's so important to see that. It will change your life. It will change the way you speak. It changed the way I speak. I used to use the word black and dark as a negative thing. And then on seeing that, I realized...
Blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice.
I started to see how much it actually goes in the collective subconscious. The idea of something being fair, being lighter, being, you know... And then it all reflects on this Nazi, Hitler, Aryan thing, which actually originated in India with the, the caste system.
The caste system.
The caste system. Mm-hmm. And colorism that comes
caste system. What is the caste system? Just if you wanted to know, if you go to India today, if you go to North India where Taj Mahal is, and they were, North India was colonized by Muslim... What would they call? Mughal, by the Mughals, Muslim Mughals. Whereas, of course, before it was in a Hindu country. So now if we have ever watched Slumdog Millionaire, we'll remember at the beginning of the film, we see Muslims and Hindus fighting in India. Very violent, very traumatic. And if you've never seen it before...
They're still doing that now.
They're still doing that now. And that's what's going on. So there's this war between the Muslims and the Hindus. Mm. Now, if we go to India, if we go to the south of India, we'll see people with dark skin, Sri Lankans, Bangladeshis, dark-skinned people. In the north, we have the wealthy people. And, you know, if we think of Bollywood, we'll see the light-skinned people.
Always.
Always. Always the lighter-skinned people. Always the lighter-skinned people.
Always. And this goes into the collective subconscious. This goes into people's, you know, at least, you know, in India, they're very open about it. They will say things just openly, you are darker skinned, I don't love you as much, to their children. This is literally just quite classic.
Mm-hmm.
I've met people where this has been their experience in life. It, you know, that goes in, that's very painful. Internal racism is hard, and also in family racism and colorism and these sort of things, it's really difficult. And so this use of the word dark, but then you think about the void, you think about the womb, you think about when you want to sleep. I'm sorry, but when I learned this from my Native American elder who taught me at 15, and somebody said to him, do you practice black magic? And he said, oh yes, of course. And they went, what? And he was like, yes, I practice magic at night. I practice light magic and dark magic.
Okay, you do both?
Magic in the day and magic at night. Huh. For him, the idea, he said, in our tribe, there is no such thing as the word dark and black as being a negative thing. They don't have it. It just does not exist as a negative thing. Black is the womb. Black is where you sleep. Dark is where you sleep. Dark is the nighttime, where the stars come out. It is the beauty. You try sleeping with the fucking lights on. It is not easy.
No.
You know, try going to the north, where they have 24 hours of daylight in the midsummer. You know, you will be wearing a mask over your eyes trying to get some sleep. We need that darkness to regenerate. That's where the mystery, the magic comes. Mm. That's where lovers want to meet in darkness. People like to make love in darkness. We like to actually, you know, this beautiful sort of letting go of inhibitions happens under the cloak of darkness. And this wonderful feeling, you know, it's like a cloak that surrounds us and comforts us in the light. You know, if I've had mental health issues,
I'm getting an image of Harry Potter and you're under the invisibility cloak.
Yes,
going into the forbidden library, into the forbidden forest, all of it.
But in the light, you can feel very exposed.
Yes.
If you're feeling fragile, there are animals that are nocturnal because it's safer in the dark. There are things that in the light, it can be so bright sometimes. Children, babies, when they're born, they don't cry because they're in the dark. They cry because they see the light and it's blinding. Mm. And it hurts their eyes.
How traumatic.
And
how
it's traumatic. They've been in this beautiful void of safety and nourishment where they get their food that just goes in through their belly. It's all comfort. It's all love. And then suddenly they're catapulted into the light. You know, I also make a little joke when people are like, oh, the light at the end of the tunnel. I'm like, bitch, that's an oncoming train. I mean, light, I'm not saying the light is bad. Light, I mean, anyone who has lived through a British winter will appreciate the light. We need light. We love light. We need sunshine. We love it. We love it. We love it. My God, in this hemisphere, we really, really
say
love
Say that
it.
Again. Light at the end of the tunnel
is an oncoming train.
Thank you so much, Jordan. That has been quite a podcast. I would think you would agree. Do you agree? I think she agrees. Well, this has been a magical, gorgeous discovery. And you know what, ladies and gentlemen? We can all do little podcasts like this. We're sat in a cafe. I've got my telephone. I'm about to upload this to my little Podbean website. And it is going to be done in the space of 10 minutes. So get ready for the 21st century, honey.
Love. 2020, baby.
Things are a lot easier than you think they are. 2020 vision. Yeah. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Because I'm Humanity. Ta-ta for now.